Tonight we're going to have a discussion on rights-based morality versus utilitarian morality, and whether there's a conflict, and if so, how much. So conventionally, it's seen as obvious that utilitarianism and deontological views are opposed. They're classically portrayed as the two main branches of ethics. But there are ways in which they might converge, as I'll get to a little bit later. So a classic example of the distinction could be the trolley problem, where especially the second variant of the trolley problem that includes a fat man on a bridge. So there's a trolley coming along, headed toward five people on a track, and if it's not stopped, it'll kill all five people. And you're on a footbridge above the track, and there's also a very fat man there. And if you push the fat man in front of the trolley, then you'll save the five people by stopping the train. And the thought experiment assumes that there's no other way to save the five people. You can't sacrifice yourself because you're not heavy enough, and you can't signal to the train or do anything else. So there's an inherent trade-off between saving five people, and saving five people requires killing the fat man. So the classic assumption is that utilitarianism endorses pushing the fat man off because five deaths is worse than one death. Rights-based views say that it's wrong to violate the person's right to life, and preventing greater harm doesn't outweigh that rights violation. That's the standard picture, and there are many more cases where you can imagine how this comes up. For example, should we allow animal testing if it offers the potential for greater harm reduction in the long term, like if the medication saves enough people or helps enough animals. Of course, in practice, there may be cases where lab experiments are frivolous, especially in psychology realms, or even just where lab animals are used far more than is needed for the benefits. But there might be some cases where this trade-off is more genuine. There are some arguments why the two views may not be in as much opposition as you might think. So for one thing, humans are very much rule-following animals, and it's just a lot easier to have rules of thumb that work most of the time than it is to make calculations in specific cases. So this is the basis of rule utilitarianism, which is kind of a middle ground in some sense between regular act utilitarianism and deontology. The idea is that you have rules that in general, if followed, conduce to good outcomes. And that's maybe even better than trying to calculate in every case, because the calculations can be faulty, or there might be temporal inconsistency between what's good now versus what would be good later. If you kind of stick to rules in the long run, that may serve you best. One example that's sometimes given is if you're a tennis player, you should, you're facing an unusual shot, you should still go with one of your habitual swings rather than trying to do something totally new, because you haven't really practiced that, and it's likely to be a worse outcome than if you follow something that's tested and that works in most cases. So we can already see that rule utilitarianism is sort of a compromise between the two views. In general, you can apply this thinking more broadly, like at the social level, for example. Laws work very well, and laws are sort of rule-based guidelines for conduct, and it would be a lot harder to require cost-benefit calculations because people would have different views on what that would look like. Of course, in economics, we can apply cost-benefit calculations often with success, and if there's a standard way to do things, then that might work pretty well, for example, for rationing medical treatments or whatnot. But especially for everyday decisions where it's just an individual making some decision on his or her own, laws are a much just more practical way to enforce general social, pro-social behavior. So that's another just example where, in concrete terms, the utilitarian ideal has to be made practical by being more deontological, at least in a applied deontological sense. And then there are further kind of long-term considerations. For example, the idea of social norms in general is something that tends to work in practice. Like when somebody, say, lies or breaks a law or steals or does some other violation in one case, it tends to degrade the principle as a whole more broadly, because then other people feel that person was getting away with it, I should get away with it too. And so it kind of can encourage a spiral of breakdown of order. And when you have, when you allow people to do their own calculations, it's much easier to claim that this was justified for the greater good. And people might even deceive themselves to thinking it was justified for the greater good, even though it was actually their evolutionary instincts that was pushing them in that direction, or they were just happily miscalculating things. So we see this with the question about whether ends justify the means. And Eliezer Yudkowsky has an article saying that the ends don't justify the means among humans. The idea being, historically, it seems the case that many humans either claim to be doing something net good when they encroach on others, or may even believe that they're doing net good when they encroach on others. And so the idea is that empirically it seems that if you impose a sort of rights-based limits on what people are allowed to do, what he calls ethical injunctions, that may in the long run lead to better outcomes, because just because of the nature of human psychology. It's conceivable that you could build agents that wouldn't have this problem. And so that's why he says among humans, there are theoretical agents that would actually optimize utility based on appropriate calculations. But just as a long-run lesson of history, it seems that it's potentially dangerous to give too much control to certain people to do what they claim is the right thing. So then this kind of extends to real-life cases. Like you might say that doing a lab experiment on an animal is justified by the greater good, but then many other people will do the same experiments for much more frivolous purposes. And in general, it can just lead to make it more likely that people will abuse the system, essentially. So we see the same thing in other areas where something might seem like naively a good thing to do, but it's important to enforce a social norm against it because of where it might lead. So this is maybe the classic slippery slope argument, which is sometimes called a logical fallacy, but in practice we see that values do kind of approach new places by a steady trajectory. So there are many cases in which slippery slopes do apply. So that's kind of a way to phrase deontology in a rights-based frame, in a utilitarian framework. And there seems to be a lot of overlap between what this more sophisticated utilitarianism would endorse and what the rights-based views tend to endorse. So, of course, rights views have a language of natural rights or universal rights or the intrinsic rightness of the deontological framework, which is not like metaphysically valid, but it's kind of the way that humans think, and it's just kind of the utilitarians can think of it as an instrumentally important way to help to build the system of relationships that tends to work well. So there may still be some differences between the two views, but if you take this more refined approach, then you can see that some compromise between rights and utilitarian views may actually be the best, even from a utilitarian perspective.
If it is better on strictly utilitarian terms, for example, to have an absolute prohibition on torture enshrined in law, because this will actually lead to better, happier consequences, And likewise, I think it'd be very good to abolish the property status of sentient beings. This means, yes, changing the law, and effectively this means closing down factory farms and slaughterhouses. And I think this is the appropriate framework for whether you're from a utilitarian perspective and also from a rights-based perspective. I mean, something like if one actually decides to enshrine in law the right of sentient beings not to be harmed, then all sorts of good consequences follow from a utilitarian perspective. And so in that sense, I think we ought to be aiming for a kind of high-tech Jainism. Mm-hmm.
There's some trade-off between being flexible and being rigid. Sometimes being rigid is to your advantage. So one example is Parfit's Hitchhiker, which is discussed by Eliezer Yudkowsky, where you're stranded in the desert and you're going to die without access to civilization. And then somebody comes along, Paul Ekman, who's an expert at reading faces to detect whether people are lying. He comes along in a car and he asks, or you promise, I'll give you $50 from my ATM if you rescue me. And of course, once you get rescued, you have no incentive to follow through because you're already saved, so you may as well keep the money. So secretly, you're planning to not give him the money because once you're saved, it's better for you to keep it. So, but Paul Ekman is an expert face reader, and he sees that you're lying, so he leaves you in the desert, and you die. So it's important to be able to have temporal consistency in your decisions. Even once you're saved, you should still want to give him the money, even though at that point it's no advantage to you. So the rights-based view, the inflexibility allows you to win in a situation like that. If you can't change the rules all the time, then sometimes you actually do better because you can make these kinds of promises. That shows up in general with lying and stealing and deception. The fact that you can avoid it even when it matters is what makes it work in the first place.
A lot of these seem more like strategic considerations or things that it's useful to implement under utilitarianism rather than kind of like well, obviously, there are lots of differences between the two theories, but the way we're discussing it seems more like strategic considerations that it's a good idea to use as heuristics under utilitarianism because it leads to better outcomes.
Right. So, as I said, the kind of metaphysical or pure moral realist conception of deontology is not what I'm suggesting, although many people think that way. And maybe thinking that way is the best way for many people to act because, like, in a practical setting, what's going to keep you from lying when it matters? Thinking about the strategic principle, you might just kind of think, well, just this once I can get away with it, and it's not going to be a big deal. If you think in terms of this grander metaphysical system, that may, in practice, at least for many people, be a stronger way to enforce the behavior.
Mm.
Certainly, if you have this kind of picture of the importance of temporal consistency in your decisions, then that can also be strongly motivating. But most people don't think that way at the moment. And so in practice, just kind of commitment to principle is a psychological mechanism that seems to work well.
Yeah. And in a real world example where the world doesn't end after the thought experiment, reputation building is a very important part. So the only really safe way to make sure that people believe you is that you actually do what you say. So that would be a very strong reason for sticking with what one says.
I think I agree with your conclusions that rigid rules are often have advantages for our malfunctioning hardware, but I think the ontology promotes two things that are very disadvantageous. First, the disbelief in natural rights and stuff, it promotes just mysterious, confused thinking, which is one case, and the second, you already talked about it. The second one, I think, is like that the ontology like is a promotes an ethical, satisfying mindset where people are, they just think, if as long as I'm not killing, not lying and stuff, like I'm a good person, and they will, I don't know, wake up in heaven and stuff like this. So, and I think this are the two advantages of utilitarianism.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that life is sort of messy and complicated and sometimes has these difficult moral dilemmas, but whether or not to harm other sentient beings for frivolous purposes, I mean, this is not a moral dilemma, more or less whatever your ethical framework, I would say, whether you're think of yourself as a utilitarian or rights-based or virtue theorist or a Christian who wants to do good in the world, harming other sentient beings, as I said, for something as frivolous as the fact that you happen to like the taste, yes, I think should be completely taboo. So though from a philosophical perspective, some of these debates are interesting in terms of practical consequences, I would say the first thing to do is just stop eating meat and animal products.